Hi, my name is Mark Little. Welcome to showbizmonkeys.com. Around this town, I'm all right. Around this town,
I'm all right. I mean, no consequence when you playing with the fire. You've been down in New York the last few years. Mm-hmm. Doing stand-up, doing a bunch of different things, not just stand-up. Can you talk a little bit about your move to New York and your experience doing stand-up there, doing sketches, especially a lot of Instagram, that sort of thing that you've been doing there, and just talk about your experience making that move?
Yeah, I moved like 3 years ago. Had a big breakup and a sort of chaotic post-breakup few months, and I think it was during that period that I was like, all right, maybe New York. It was like an opportunity to make big life changes, I guess. That was the silver lining of it all. And so being down here has been awesome. You know, it's like I've wanted to live in New York forever. So like I actually had a room rented the month that the pandemic started. So that's when I was supposed to, that was the most recent time that I was supposed to make the move, and it did not come together. But since I've been down here, yeah, I've just been like making little videos as a way to sort of, I mean, it's fun. It's a way to like be creative because it's kind of hard to get stage time down here when you first move. But also it's like the best way to introduce yourself to people. If they've seen a video of yours, they're far more likely to trust you and put you on their show than just tell them like your credits. So it was like helpful to do that. So I was doing that pretty hard when I first got down here, and it's kind of tailed off a little bit. But in the past year, I've mostly been doing the Herald shows at UCB.
Ooh. Yeah, so you've obviously got a background in improv, sketch, and stand-up, which New York is a great place for all of those things. So I'm glad to hear, yeah, that you're still doing improv along with the stand-up and everything else. How is you've come from obviously the East Coast and then Toronto, which has a good history of comedy, but I mean, New York is one of those, well, Toronto too, obviously, with improv and sketch, but like New York, UCB, like these are, key places for improv. How's it been regularly performing in places like that?
I mean, the improv scene down here is really so much bigger than anywhere I've ever lived. And that was like a big part of why I wanted to move. Because I think like in Toronto, like the pandemic hit every comedy community really hard, but improv, like stand-up bounced back a bit, mostly. It mostly bounced back, and it's probably all the way back now. But improv and sketch kind of got torched, and they never really came back. So I remember, like, I feel like when I left Toronto, there was, like, two sketch groups, like, 3 years ago, and at least, like, two, like, regularly performing sketch groups and only a handful of improv shows, so... Again, I'm sure it's all coming back slowly, but even at its peak, like there was only so much going on in the improv world. So yeah, it's awesome to just be like down here with people who are so good at it and just trying to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before you started performing at UCB, you were doing a lot of video improv with Christian Smith. Yeah, I don't know if that was like pandemic related or move related or both, that you started doing that video virtual improv, but can you talk about, obviously he's someone you've worked with a lot, why you wanted to even use that unconventional format for improv?
Well, I think it just took me so long to like get Instagram at all. Like I just didn't have it, I think, until the pandemic. And then when I finally got it and started like seeing the opportunity to like make silly little videos again for the first time in years, I just got excited by that. And I think, yeah, because Christian and I couldn't be in the same space, we just started making those little videos during COVID. And It kept going for a little bit after I moved down here, but sort of tailed off. We both got a little bit busy. He got very busy. He got very, he started directing movies and stuff. He's a busy boy.
And I know you said you're concentrating on improv more these days, but talk about the stand-up scene. I've seen, you know, clips of you doing shows in interesting locations down there. It seems like in New York, because you said it's like it's hard to get stage time, people will put up shows pretty much anywhere. I've heard, you know, similar things about LA as well, but
yeah,
you talk about like finding, you know, your people in a city that big with a comedy scene that big.
Yeah, I mean, moving down here at my age, where I was like 40 when I moved, is like kind of crazy, because you're really thrown back into like beginner circles. Like open mics is all that's available to you when you first get down here, unless you're already kind of famous. So I was doing a lot of open mics with a lot of like 20 somethings, and it's fine. It was great. It's like the open mic scene down here is, it gets a bad reputation as like, oh, you have to pay to get on stage, and everyone's like super toxic. And I think that is true for some, but in Brooklyn especially, there's like a really supportive open mic scene where you absolutely do not have to pay to be on stage. At most, sometimes the bar would like you to buy a drink, and I feel like compelled to do that anyway, because I'm like, thank God you're hosting an open mic. Like, I don't think you realize that you could be putting on another type of thing right now that people would actually want to see. But it's like there's a lot of support for those communities and within those communities for one another. So I think that was like my super positive introduction to New York comedy, was realizing that the open mic scenes are like that. And then, you know, you just slowly meet people through that, find your way to shows, independent shows, monthly shows. I started doing more regular stuff at one of the clubs, the Tiny Cupboard, which is just like a small Brooklyn club. But when people talk about New York, they're like, you can get up 5 times a night. And I think that's true for like a small handful of people, unless you're doing open mics. But if you're not talking about open mics, if you're talking about like real shows, then it just takes a lot of hustling to like introduce yourself to like the club owners, get on their radar. And when you come from Canada or like a smaller scene, you're kind of like used to people asking you to do their shows. If you've proven to be like competent at comedy, and people like, you know, there's only so many people to choose from in most of these smaller scenes. But in New York, it's like, oh my God, you could be the best comedian in the world, but like nobody gives a shit. Most people are like, no, I want that stage time. Like, so you can fall off the radar pretty quickly. And and that's something where, like, traveling down here in my 40s, I'm like, boy, do I not have the energy to grind like I used to. So I think I'm taking a pretty like slow approach to stand up stage time, hoping that I can kind of like tortoise my way into the good stages eventually. But yeah, we'll see. Maybe not. Maybe
it's just, I never will. It's just so funny to hear that as someone who obviously knows your work up here, with, you know, Picnic Face and TV, movies, all these things that you've done, to like just be, you know, another open micer. And then not even up here. Like, I mean, you've done Conan. Like, it's not like you don't have, like, it's not like 100% Canadian credits. Like, that's a significant credit, but still, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's kind of what's awesome about New York, is it's like you meet lots of people who have late night credits. They're kind of all over. It's like, it is what makes the scene amazing, because you feel compelled to raise your level. Because if that's like an average comedian,
right,
then you're like, whoa, fuck, okay, I gotta work harder. I want to be as good as like the really, really, really good comedians. And you have access to them. You just see them all the time. You get to see them perform and get inspired. So yeah, man, it's crazy. Like, even at open mics, there, you know, open mics still have like some crazy people. Like, that'll be true no matter where you are. But down here, it's like, I'll just see some random person go on stage, and you get 3 minutes at the mics down here, 3 minutes. And in those 3 minutes, I'll be like, oh my God, you're really good. What are you doing at this open mic? And it's cool, you know, it's cool. It's depressing, but it's cool.
I don't think I've seen you since Cavendish
Oh, wow. Okay.
on
That's a long time ago.
CBC. It is, yeah. I think it's been that long, because then the pandemic hit not that long after that.
That's true.
I know it was only one season, but I loved that show. Friends of mine loved that show.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Just to go a little bit back to that, what kind of experience did you have working on that show with Andy and getting to, go to the East Coast and film this very, very weird show that CBC let you put on the air?
It was cool. It was really stressful, just like nonstop stress and work. But periodically, we were able to sort of step back and enjoy it, and it was really fun. Making a Canadian show is just like the budgets are so low that it's interesting. Like, I didn't account for how much our approach to making comedy was going to have to change just based on the fact that you don't get a lot of takes. You don't have the budget for a lot of takes. So after everything's finally set up, you can get three takes, but that means two of them at least are going to be to script just so you have it. And then maybe you get one take to like mess around a little bit. Whereas like our approach is we're used to just like really messing around and finding fun new stuff and just seeing where that goes. So that was like an adjustment and kind of a bummer. And it kept us like going so hard the entire time, like pushing to be like, let's set up faster, let's go, let's carve out more time to for this like fun chaos so that we can capture these extra moments. So that was the learning curve of it. But it was cool. Like we got to cast all of our funny friends and see them do their thing and see certain things come to life better than we imagined, and certain things fall so flat in ways that we hadn't anticipated. And I think that's just the nature of making like a first season of something, is you're like, you fail so much and then you succeed a bit. And if you're lucky enough to get a second season, you get to like say, okay, let's do that stuff that we succeeded at more and let's cut out that other stuff. And I think we would have done that if we'd gotten a second season, but whatever, it doesn't happen always. But I think like we were super happy with the last episode, and that's what was like kind of such a bummer about it, is we were like the last episode where we're parodying It's a Wonderful Life and Andy wishes that I had never been born because he thinks his life would be better, and then he's right. His wish is granted and he gets to see life without me and it's way better, and then he doesn't want to go to back to how things are, so he like accidentally kills this angel who's trying to drag him back, and I'm playing the angel, so I'm playing multiple characters. Like it entered more of like a sketch comedy world than previous episodes, and it was like by far our favorite. And so it would have been cool to do a second season and just be like, how do we make the show more of that, and less of like a conventional sitcom, which I think sometimes you think there's like rules to how you do this and that can kind of handcuff you. And I think that's what was difficult with the first few episodes, is we were like, how do you do a pilot? And then you end up just making something a little bit more boring than you wish you had.
You're no stranger to Just for Laughs. We're talking because you're doing Just for Laughs Vancouver. But I think I first met you in Winnipeg at the Winnipeg Comedy Festival. But one of the early times that I met you was when Picnic Face was doing something at Just for Laughs in Montreal. And then you've got a long history at JFL Toronto doing Late Bad. So how is it now jumping to JFL Vancouver hosting the alternative show, which itself has like this iconic Just for Laughs history with Andy Kindler, James Adomian hosting these alternative shows? Are you excited to kind of take up that mantle in a different city?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited just to do the festival period. I think I did JFL Vancouver once, but it would have been so long ago. But I love JFL. I love JFL Toronto especially, because it's such just like a fun, strange energy to it. It feels like more of like a clubhouse hangout, kind of everyone running around and then finding themselves at the same venue and just getting silly together. I'm hoping JFL Vancouver is like that. I think it might be. As far as the alternative show goes, like, yeah, it's so cool to be able to host it. It's intimidating. Not that it's actively intimidating, because I don't think anyone is going to be going to that show being like, I expect Andy Kindler and Andy Kindler quality jokes. Like, I think most people are just going to be coming to see a show. But in the back of my mind, you know, I've seen Andy Kindler host it a dozen times. So I know how good he is and how amazing and specific he made that show. And I think it's going to be important for me to just not try to do that. Because if I get up there and I'm just like, the alternative show is where you roast the festival and every comic you've ever met the way Andy would.
And another thing.
Yeah, I think I'll fall flat if I try and just be Andy Kindler.
Yeah.
I got to be me. But who's
you
that?
You was great, Mark.
Thank you, Paul. And we're not related, despite our names.
Yeah, totally unrelated.
You're not buttering me up because you're a cousin of mine.
No.
You're just a different guy.
I guess, theoretically, we haven't gone down the family tree.
That's true. It's possible.
Always a possibility. Yeah. Do you know, can you talk about, or do you even know yet, who will be on the shows with you? On the JFL page, it just says Mark Little hosting the alternative show February 14th and 15th. Can you talk about who we might see? Anyone in Vancouver that's going there, or you don't know?
I don't even know. I don't know. I do know from other festivals that, like, really good comics want to do that show because it's the show where it's like promised that you're going to see something strange or not typical for like a comedy festival, a comedy show, someone's act. You're going to see someone try something different, be it like new material or I don't know, characters. It's an excuse to like get outside of your usual self. So yeah, you know, in the past it's like I've been in the green room yeah, comedy bar, and like Louis CK dropped by, RIP. May his soul rest in the afterlife evermore. But like, you know, like huge comics from the festival at any on any given year would want to do this show. And so I don't know if that'll be the case in Vancouver. It would be super cool if James Acaster dropped by. Wouldn't that be cool? Ooh. Or if Zach Galifianakis dropped by, wouldn't that be cool? Who knows? It might not happen, but it might.
I don't know when you get into Vancouver, when you're leaving Vancouver, but is there anyone else at the festival that you're excited to see, either see their shows, see them in person? I know one particular show you're probably really looking forward to seeing.
But, my girlfriend's show.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm going to go see Wally Barham's show. She's great. She's she is my partner and my live-in partner. and the owner of my heart. But I am also excited to see I like Emil Joachim and Michael Longfellow are two fellas I know from New York, and they're very funny. I'm excited to see their longer sets. But I think, yeah, primarily I'm excited to see James Acaster. I've never seen him. I only know him from online clips. And if I get a chance to see his show, I think that would be awesome. I think he's a very special comic.
I would agree. I thought I might be in Vancouver for this festival, and I had tickets to the show.
Oh,
and I'm not going to be in Vancouver, and had to get rid of those tickets to the show. So
Dang. Someday
I will see Acaster. But
sorry.
That's just the way it is. I hope you get to see him. And I hope he stops by the alternative show too.
That'll be cool.
I'm wishing it into existence.
Yeah. He's got a performance energy that would match that show well, I feel.
I know you primarily spend your time in New York these days, but for anyone who isn't going to be in Vancouver this weekend, just let people know where they can find you online, if you'll be back in Toronto for any shows, things like that.
Yeah, well, I'll be back in Toronto in late March for a couple months off and on. So I'll be doing all my usual shows there, including Nice Time every Wednesday, I think, at Comedy Bar, I think, unless things have changed.
Okay.
That's my improv show out there. It's a great one. But primarily, you can find me online. I'm on Instagram at @MarkLittle_good or TikTok at what the hell's my name on there? Oh, sick, Mark Little. And I got a new podcast that you can listen to.
Yes.
And it's name is pending change. So actually, I can't even. I think it's going to be called Christopher and Mark's Guide to the World and All Within It. Something like that. But it's two idiots telling you about everything. Everything.
It's one of your frequent Instagram collaborators, right?
Christopher Isaacson. Yeah. The wonderful.
Yeah. Everyone should check that out, and great catching up. And at some point, we'll be in the same city again, and I'll see you again. But
I hope so.
Yeah, have fun in Vancouver.
Thanks, Paul. I'll say hi to James Acaster for you.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
You're welcome.